and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we're talking about eggplant.
We are. But first, I thought maybe we'd address the fact of our new recording situation.
Yeah. We've got a fancy new studio, and by studio, I mean Annie and I are both in our closets.
Yes. You know, when I first moved in here, I did intend for this closet to be my office. So ultimately,
well,
it's worked out for me.
In a way, you're fulfilling, I'm not going to say a dream. Dream is a sharp word. But yeah, you're fulfilling a desire.
Yes, yes. So
an intention.
Exactly. Because it was my office, and then it became a cosplay closet and a book closet. Yeah, I am right next to a window, so if it sounds like a birdhouse, I mean, apologies. We're doing what we can.
Yeah. And I'm not like in my closet. I'm just facing my closet. So I'm using like my like Edwardian morning gown as sound baffling. There may or may not be cats that come and join us at some point. You know, we're just trying to keep each other and everyone safe during this, our time of coronavirus. And yeah, it's going to be great.
It is. And so is this episode about eggplants.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a house, my dad hated eggplant, so no eggplant in the house. But since I moved to Atlanta, I've come to love spicy fried eggplant. That's one of my favorite things.
Oh, wow. Huh. My dad, eggplant parmesan is definitely one of the dishes that my dad would make, like, at work, never at home. Not going to go through that mess at home. But make it work and bring home sometimes. And that was delicious. But yeah, I love an eggplant. I love it when it's like nice and like silky and I think mm-hmm. we just grilled some eggplant a couple days ago.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. There was a lot of eggplant to be had when I was in China. That was a very popular dish. Stewed eggplant. Delicious.
Yeah.
But okay.
Oh, right. Yes. We're also working with each other like on Skype, so we can kind of see each other
mm-hmm.
via delay. So if we sound like we're working with a slight delay, that's why.
Yes. There's a reason for everything. But okay, let's get to our question. Eggplants. What is it?
Oh, well, eggplant is a kind of spongy, moist, slightly bitter and earthy-tasting fruit. Yes, a fruit. With tiny seeds and a thin, glossy skin. It's like a more solid through tomato that's been victim to a vegetable vampire, which just reminds me of Benicula again. But have you read that book yet? People are asking.
I have not read it. I have some time now, so... Yeah, I'll get on it.
I'll try to get you a copy. Oh, gosh. Eggplant. Yes. It is related to the tomato. Both are members of the genus Solanum. Eggplant is the species Solanum melongena. Potatoes are also in this genus and tobacco. It's in the nightshade family. And gosh, we should do an episode about poisons.
Yes, we should.
I mean, they're edible.
Sure. You don't have to convince me, Lauren. I am on board.
I really wanted to do like a poison rabbit hole and talk about nightshades a whole lot, but didn't have time today. Subject for another episode. We will absolutely come back to it.
Oh, yes.
But there are a couple other species in Solanum that are referred to as eggplants around the world. They're a warm weather, tropical kind of plant in general. And they grow on these smallish, soft-stemmed shrubs, usually like a meter or 3 feet tall, broad green leaves that shade these pretty flowers that come in shades of white, purple, and pink, and then develop into fruits with skin in shades of white, yellow, green, red, and purple, like all the way to purple-black. Sometimes spotted or striped, and in shapes from globes the size of a pea to a golf ball, or tubes or other like oblongs that can be about a foot long or about a third of a meter. The inner flesh remains white, though. And we eat eggplants when they're still immature, still soft, because they go all like stringy when they're fully ripe. Wouldn't be good. They're used as a vegetable. Some varieties are eaten raw in some places, but most are cooked, whereupon that flesh gets sort of like a silky and extra soft and almost creamy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
An eggplant is eaten in all kinds of ways. Stuffed as parmigiana, baba ganoush, baked, sautéed, fried.
Stewed, pickled, grilled, moussaka, ratatouille.
A movie you still haven't seen.
I
still
have not.
We could virtually watch this.
Oh, we should.
We should.
Okay.
And Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, of course. Which is on Netflix right now, so...
Oh, cool. Okay. All right. I mean, hey, I've got a box of wine and plenty of time after this, so.
Perfect. Perfect.
If you are looking to fry eggplant specifically, it does indeed help to salt it and press it before you do that, because that draws out and then squeezes out moisture from that kind of spongy flesh. Although if you're preparing it in other ways, that's less necessary. And I'm not totally sure about the whole like salt helping with bitterness thing, but yeah.
Yeah. The eggplant goes by a bunch of different names. Aubergine, which is my favorite. Guinea squash, bergeal, and melongine. So where does the name eggplant come from? According to Wonderopolis, it has to do with the shape of the eggplant in the 1700s when it was smaller and whitish, yellowish, so egg-like.
Yeah, I saw that in multiple places. But oddly enough, by the 1890s, like a century and a half later, purple eggplants were apparently common enough that people had started using the term eggplant to mean like dark purple. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hmm. And meanwhile, aubergine comes from the Arabic term, which is where many languages get their words for eggplant.
Yes. And now let us discuss the nutrition.
Sure, yeah. Eggplant has a whole bunch of fiber and a good smattering of kind of small amounts of vitamins and minerals like vitamin C and potassium. It'll help fill you up, but it definitely will not keep you going unless you pair it with sources of fat and protein. Eggplant dishes can be pretty fatty because all that spongy fiber soaks up oil. Just, you know, watch your portion sizes. Nothing that has been parmesaned is particularly a health food. The skins, though, are a good source of a number of compounds that our bodies can use to do good stuff, antioxidants and stuff like that. And anything fibery is good for helping control blood sugar and cholesterol. And the flesh does contain a chlorogenic acid, which can help reduce blood pressure. The leaves of most varieties should not be eaten because they can be toxic. Good things not to eat.
Sure.
But they are used medicinally in some places. I've read that they have a slight narcotic effect. The botanical genus name Solanum may in fact refer to the soothing effect of the leaves when used topically. And the whole plant has been, and in some places still is, used medicinally for all kinds of things, which science is looking into. Bodies are weird. More research needs to be done.
Numbers-wise, China, India, Turkey, Iran, and Egypt make up about 90% of world eggplant production.
China alone is like 57%. And apparently in India, it's referred to as the king of vegetables. Perhaps it has like a cap where the stem connects to the fruit that sort of looks like a crown. Perhaps,
I can see it, yeah.
Yeah, sure, totally, totally. Or perhaps just because it's like inexpensive and well-liked. Yeah, maybe both.
I can see that too.
In Asia and the Mediterranean, it's considered one of the five most important vegetable crops. And as of 2014, humans were producing some 50 million tons per year with a total value of over $10 billion.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. The Guinness record for the heaviest eggplant is a specimen from the UK that in 2018 at the National Giant Vegetables Championships, which is a thing, which we need to go to, clearly.
Yes. Yes.
The specimen weighed in at 3.06 kilos, which is 6 pounds, 11 ounces.
Whew.
Which is heavier than I was as a baby.
I would not want to get hit with that eggplant.
Or with a baby, neither.
No, neither.
There's also a record on recordsetter.com, which is not a site that I have a lot of familiarity with, but apparently you can just like submit records for whatever, and you can challenge records for whatever. There's a record on there for most eggplant passes between two people in 30 seconds, and it is 83 times.
Ooh, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, right?
It reminds me of field day. Did you have field day?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When the water balloon toss and you had to take a step back every time. I was very good at that.
Yeah, yeah. You probably wouldn't believe this about me, but I am surprisingly good at throwing related, like tossing related skills.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
Maybe we can challenge this record.
And
We need a record.
Oh, gosh, we do. Oh, we could. I bet we could come up with all kinds of creative, weird records.
I believe in us. I have faith.
Y'all have any ideas? Write in.
Please.
Also, the World Vegetable Center has seed samples from 3 cultivated and over 30 wild species of eggplant. Overall, upwards of 3,200 samples collected from 90 countries. So, yeah, there are a bunch of different varieties of eggplant out there in a bunch of different places.
That's true. And perhaps because of that, our leading up to that is history.
Yes, which we will get to right after we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So eggplant most likely originated in India, China, Thailand, Burma, or somewhere else in Southeast Asia, though its genetic descendants may have come from Africa.
Yeah, the working theory is that this wild Solanum species from Africa and or the Middle East, Solanum incanum,
Oh, that is a Harry Potter spell. You know it is. Finite incantatum Solanum incanum. It's there.
I cannot argue. I cannot argue with your logic.
Just eggplants rain down from the ceiling.
So delicious and magically, it would stop me. I would be confused.
Oh, yeah.
You could totally get the jump on me that way. Yeah.
And then I'd probably start picking up the eggplant and like stockpiling them.
Sure. Right. You know. They're delicious. They can be expensive. Come on. Anyway. Okay. Yes.
And hard to find.
Whatever this thing was, it was domesticated in ancient India, Myanmar, and China and became eggplant. And independent domestication may have happened later on in what's now the Philippines, but yes.
Instead of food, most early documentation indicates it was mainly used medicinally. Ayurvedic texts dating back to 100 BCE describe some of the believed health benefits of eggplant. The first known written direct record of eggplant in Sanskrit literature took place in 3rd century CE, although a possible indirect reference might go back all the way to 300 BCE and as far back to 59 BCE, ancient Chinese literature possibly was referencing eggplant. Centuries of domestication documented by the ancient Chinese increased the weight and size of eggplant and changed other traits like flesh and peel color, prickliness, and flavor. Documents and botanical drawings follow the process from the 7th to the 19th centuries CE. It's like really useful and helpful.
Yeah.
Totally documented.
Yeah.
Very rare.
That prickliness is really interesting because a lot of wild species still do get like a lot of prickles, especially on the plant, but sometimes on the fruit itself. And so it's something that has been very specifically bred out of most domestic eggplants.
Exactly. Beginning around the 6th century CE, merchants transported eggplant for trade along the Silk Road to Africa, the Middle East, and further west into Europe. But some evidence dating back to the 2nd century CE indicates that the eggplant was not unknown outside of Asia, possibly carried by Alexander the Great. Records show it made it to Japan by the 8th century CE. Medieval Persian medical texts cautioned the use of eggplant, warning it could cause a huge host of negative outcomes, from leprosy to elephantitis to pimples to insomnia to blood thickening and blackening. However, it wasn't all bad. I know this sounds a little risky, but it wasn't all bad with proper preparation, which I believed involved salting eggplant. They claimed that it could be beneficial.
Shrug
emoji. Eggplant has been in a lot of art. One piece in particular that caught our eye dates back to the 1300s and depicts the believed aphrodisiac properties of the eggplant. And it looks, I really enjoyed that painting. The eggplant looks quite royal. Quite the sight to behold. During the 15th to 17th centuries, the Spanish brought the eggplant to South America, and it was recorded in Brazil by the middle of the 18th century. In 1544, herbalist Mathioli wrote of the eggplant's potential as an aphrodisiac, translating to those that eat love apples, eggplants are receptive to flirting. So he basically said, if you eat these love apples, which were eggplant, you're going to be open to possibilities in the love realm.
Yeah. And I think that most of this was specifically about women. It was said that, like, if women eat these things, then they'll be more, receptive to flirtation.
Right, exactly. Other countries in Europe where the eggplant did not grow so well viewed eggplant a lot more suspiciously. In 1597, English herbalist Gerard wrote, "In Egypt and Barbary, they used to eat the fruit of mala and sana boiled or roasted under ashes with oil, vinegar, and pepper, as people used to eat mushrooms. But I rather wish Englishmen to content themselves with the meat and sauce of our own country than with the fruit and sauce eaten with such peril. For doubtless these apples have a mischievous quality. The use thereof is utterly to be forsaken. Therefore it is better to esteem this plant and have him in the garden for your pleasure and the rareness thereof than of any virtue or good qualities yet known." So some racism there.
Yeah, just a little bit of xenophobia. Fine. Thanks.
But I do like something being called having a mischievous quality. The eggplant. I can just imagine it like sitting in my fruit bowl. Like, oh, how mischievous.
like twirling its little mustachio. Yeah.
Exactly.
And mala insana. Yeah, that translates to like insanity apple or like madness apple.
Right. Yes. Some countries in Europe referred to eggplant as mad apples around this time, and they believed that eating them would possibly lead to insanity.
And that's actually where we get that botanical name from. Melangina derives from the Italian name for the plant, melanzane, which derives from mala insana. So cool. I don't know. People were wary of things that reminded them of the poisonous members of the nightshade family, which I think is a little bit fair.
Sure.
But also see our tomatoes episode for so much more hilarity regarding all of that.
Yes. And werewolves. If you need another reason to check it out. Werewolves. If we look at art created post-Renaissance in Europe, the art suggests a rise in eggplant's popularity as determined by its more frequent depictions. I found an entire, I think it was 18-page paper just on the art with eggplant in it from this time period. So,
oh, that's so cool. Huh.
I know. I really enjoyed it. The eggplant, though, didn't make its way to the U.S. market until the 1900s.
Currently, eggplant is one of the 29 key food crops being investigated by the Millennium Seed Bank and the Global Crop Diversity Trust for development of climate change-hardy varieties. They're doing this by checking out the genes and apparent traits of wild relatives of all of the crops in question and seeing whether, like, crossbreeding or genetics could help create cultivars that'll do well in these our changing climate conditions. Yes. The first, it took a while for eggplant to really receive this attention, perhaps because in some cultures it's associated, it's like a poor person's food kind of thing. So yeah, the first reference genome for eggplant wasn't released until 2014, but they're working on it.
And now, emoji news.
Yeah. Y'all knew that we couldn't get through an episode without talking about the eggplant emoji.
We had to. And we're going to be pretty tame and mature, as we are known to be, right, in explaining this. But
no, really, we are.
Yes. So if you have kids around and don't want them to hear about the eggplant emoji shenanigans, because there are a lot of them, here's your heads up.
Heads up.
Yes. Okay. So for perhaps obvious reasons, the eggplant emoji became synonymous with a penis and through that, sex. To the point that in 2015, Instagram banned the eggplant emoji.
Oof.
I love this headline from First We Feast. Instagram banned the eggplant emoji hashtag because we're all children. Yep, pretty much. And also, hey, First We Feast, if you're looking for a minor podcaster to be on your not at all minor show Hot Ones, I am so here and ready to embarrass myself.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. Yeah. 20,000%. Like, call us. We will totally embarrass ourselves regarding hot sauce and probably lots of other things. So
that's right. We can go as a pair. I like this. In the meantime, while we're waiting for that email or call, yes, Instagram shut down hashtag Eggplant Friday for its not-so-PG-13 nature. And just to be clear, Instagram did not ban other emojis like the cleft peach, the syringe, the toilets. In our zeitgeist, especially here in the United States, the eggplant's association with the penis has been so solidified culturally. Rather than using similarly shaped emojis like corn or bananas, people are using other takes on eggplant emoji, like hashtag eggplant parm. Yep. Children indeed.
That is delightful. I guess dirty minds find a way.
Indeed. I have appreciated the many late night talk show jokes about it throughout the years. If you're curious, the history of it, the eggplant emoji debuted in the U.S. in 2010, introduced by the Unicode Consortium and adopted a year later on iPhones. And very, very quickly, the eggplant became a sext. The reason it was adopted over other emojis is the source of many thought-provoking papers, essays.
Yes, there's plenty of ink has been spilled on the internet about this if you choose to go read it.
But if you don't, if you don't want to go down that particular rabbit hole, we got a TLDR. Some studies around emoji use have found that around the world, Americans were definitely leading the way in the usage of the eggplant emoji. So some think that it's because culturally we don't have that many associations with it. It's not super familiar, not a super familiar thing here in the United States.
Especially not compared with the kind of short, squat Italian eggplant. And I have, to be fair, even seen. I was in an izakaya once, like a Japanese pub, right? And I ordered a dish of grilled eggplant and it was one of the longer, thinner eggplants, and it was definitely served in the most phallic way that I've ever had a dish served to me, to the point that I'm not totally positive that, like, the waitstaff wasn't punking us at this point, because, like, oh my goodness, like the skin was kind of peeled back at one tip of it. And there was definitely two like round objects placed towards the other end. Slices. And there was, you know, the little like bonito flake that, in steam, they kind of do the wavy, which is fun on dishes. Yeah. Those were dotted around the base and the circular objects. So it sort of looked like hair. So that's the thing that happened.
That was pretty brazen. Yeah.
Yeah. My Google foo has not come up with any kind of official dish that is traditionally treated this way. But also, I think there's a different sense of humor around that kind of thing in many segments of Japanese culture, and a lot more comfort with just being like, oh man, body parts are hilarious. Like that's great. So anyway,
did it taste good?
You know, I wouldn't order it again. It was a little dry.
All right. Noted. Noted.
But yes, we were talking about emoji. The squatter kind of Italian version of eggplant that apparently is what is up on Android phones and probably doesn't make any sense to y'all Android users at all. But right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm an Android user, but I've never, maybe I'll investigate after this.
Oh, I'll say, okay.
I've never felt the need to use the eggplant emoji, but I'll check into it. I'll report back. Okay. Well, some others have said that maybe the angle of the emoji or the shape or the color could be the reason why people just ran with this. Whatever the case, Eggplant Friday was introduced in December 2014, and only 5 months later, Instagram said no. They put their foot down, and from that, we got the hashtag free the eggplant. And it's ongoing.
It is.
It's an ongoing debate and battle, yeah.
Sure.
I also learned through this that eggplant penis is a medical condition.
Yep. Yep. It has been suggested that those in the medical community are even more confused, perhaps, than Android users about why this is a thing that people are using as shorthand for, like, sexy times, yeah? Because, yeah, eggplant, it refers to a penile fracture, meaning that there's a tear in the tissue of the penis that can result in blood, like, pooling, and therefore, like, a purple discoloration. It's not particularly sexy times is what I'm saying.
No. So that does not sound like sexy times at all.
No. So yeah, that's what we have to say about eggplant.
It's a good a place as any to end it. Penile fractures.
Yep. You never know. You never know where the research is going to take you. It's true. But yeah, we do have a little bit more for you. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener. I was trying to do, like, I don't know the, I'm kind of new to the emoji world. I was trying to think of the emoji sound, but.
Is there an emoji sound?
Two emojis. If a emoji falls in the woods, but no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound?
I'm just picturing falling emoji in the woods and what that means for all of us.
See, this was a really deep thought. We didn't know it was going to be deep, but here we are.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's because we've been inside for weeks. Could be that.
Either one. Who knows? Yes. Yes.
Nikki wrote, I just finished your Medieval Times episode, and I'm so excited to have an excuse to write in. I've been a fan since the very first Foodstuff episode. Oh, hi.
Oh, hi.
My family and I were visiting Myrtle Beach in 2018 and took our daughter, then 4, to Medieval Times. We even dressed her up like a princess. She was so excited to be going to a castle for dinner and a show. We got a flag for our team and she cheered for our night and waved her flag enthusiastically the whole time. When the knight was riding around throwing roses into the crowd, I caught his eye. I swear he gave me a little nod. Then, no flower. I was annoyed. However, towards the end of the show, the knight and the queen announced that my daughter was to be crowned the queen of love and beauty.
Oh.
I will attach a picture below it, and she did. It was super cute. It was pretty late, so my daughter looks a little out of it, but it was an unforgettable experience. Ever since, when people ask if she's a princess, she corrects them and says, no, I'm a queen. She still has her little gown, her little crown and scepter.
Oh, that is so delightful.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I am a queen. You get it, little girl.
That's right.
That's great.
Get it right. Address people by their proper titles.
Right. Exactly. It's all we can do to just be polite. Brian wrote, although you guys don't sound like pancake connoisseurs, thank you for doing an episode on one of my favorite foods. I'm in a lifelong pursuit of the perfect pancake, and I wanted to take this opportunity to share a few secrets I've picked up along the way. Be aware that this could change your life.
Ooh.
First, add a bit of baking soda to the mix. Yes, you heard that correctly. In addition to baking powder, add about a quarter teaspoon of soda. Second, add a dash of vinegar to the milk, then warm the milk in the microwave for about a minute before adding the other wet ingredients. These little tricks boost the bubble count and make mixing go easier. A final trick is to use olive oil as part of the wet ingredients. This will make the texture, for lack of a better term, more delicate. As with all pancake recipes, perfection requires some finesse in the stirring and griddling. However, this particular recipe will help ensure that your pancakes are fluffy. They will also be so tender that they almost fall off the fork. I considered hoarding this sacred knowledge, but I thought it was time to share my love of the only cake worthy of breakfast. Wishing you a happy pancake experience in your future.
Oh, I appreciate that sharing the sacred knowledge.
Yes, that is delightful. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe it's time. Maybe it's time for me to give it another go and redeem my pancake history.
Hey, you've got time on your hands. As long if you have flour in your house, then I think now is a great time to attempt pancakes.
Maybe I'll document it.
There you go. Yes, be scientific.
That has never gone wrong before with my lost buttermilk biscuit video.
Oh, get your science goggles on. Get whatever form of lab coat you happen to have around.
Yes. Yeah. All right, I'm into it. And before we close out, we did want to touch on, since obviously a lot of us are staying inside and these are uncertain times, several of you listeners have written in about what you're going through and thanking us for the show. So, yeah, thank you for listening. If any way we could any sort of relief or distraction, we're happy to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did want to shout out our friend Julia Skinner, who we've had on the show and we've done a video with over at Root Kitchens, started a crowdsourced document of restaurants in Atlanta where you can buy gift cards. So if you're trying to think of ways that you can support local businesses, restaurants, farmers, there are a lot of ways other than, you know, buying stuff from the restaurants.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The document has a bunch of tabs where, right. And it's totally crowdsourced. So people have just been putting in, I've put in a lot just restaurants that are still doing takeaway or that have GoFundMes for staff support or where you can buy gift cards to use at a later time and date just to give them a little bit of revenue while they are closed to the public. And yeah, there's been, I really want to do an episode. I kind of didn't want to do it today because I wanted to have sort of a normal episode for A, us to concentrate on it, and B, for y'all to listen to and, you know, get our minds off of things for just a minute. I would really love to do an episode about all of the different ways that this is impacting our food world. It's certainly impacting our show, not just because we're both talking into racks of clothes right now, but you know, like we, part of our show is travel and eating at restaurants. And I've been thinking so much about all of the beautiful, beautiful people who have given us their time and their food over the past couple years that we've been doing the travel and the interviews, and just how they're doing and how their business is doing. And so I don't know. Also, maybe episodes about like comfort food, because that would be nice.
Absolutely. Or like creative. I want to do some kind of MacGyver. How do I use this weird ingredient? Let's find out.
Oh, yeah. Like what we found in our pantries and just be like, huh, all right, let's cook with this today.
You know what I found? The durian ice cream I bought years ago.
Oh, gosh.
I'm too afraid to open it in my apartment, but maybe I'll sit outside and try some.
Oh, man, I would feel really bad if you had to go through that by yourself. I mean, I'm sure it's delightful. I'm sure it's just fine, slightly strange as, you know, far as like normal ice cream flavors go. But I'm sure no one would have made it if it wasn't kind of delicious. So
I imagine it tastes good, but it comes shrink-wrapped for the smell. That's what I'm concerned about.
Sure. Yeah.
Not the, I think it'll be fine tasting, but whew. I got a small apartment here. If I, like, my whole building gets evacuated, I'm sure they would really appreciate that.
Yeah,
it was just my ice cream.
Sorry. I was trying to enjoy ice cream.
So, yeah, there's some... We've got some ideas rolling around, but we'll be around and we'll be continuing to produce content, and we're thinking of all of you, and we're still wanting those suggestions, our emails. I know I posted a thing about what are you all cooking last night, and so many of you have emailed, and that's fantastic. So keep that stuff up.
Yeah, please do.
Yes, and if you would like to email us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. And we have been posting. Annie's really good at Instagram stories. I'm too old to understand how they work, but you're great at that.
Thank you.
And I've been putting up some links to stuff like Julia's spreadsheet and just other useful information in these uncertain times. So, yes. Check us out. We hope to hear from you. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Andrew Howard and Dylan Fagan. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.